Welcome back to The Metabolomist. Today I am joined by Audrey Le Guélec. Together we discuss how metabolomics provide a new understanding of cystic fibrosis, what metabolomics will bring to the medicine of tomorrow, and what we as a community need to do to get there. Listen in on this episode and don't forget to connect on LinkedIn to continue the conversation that we start today with Audrey Le Guélec. Welcome back to The Metabolomist for a third season, where we will dive into the concrete applications of metabolomics and where this tool will impact society in the next 5 to 10 years. I am your host, Alice Limonciel, and this year I am joined by a diverse group of scientists, medical doctors and other professionals who have used metabolomics and pushed it beyond just descriptive studies and towards applications that will or are already impacting people's lives. This year, the keyword is really impact. Like you, I know the potential of metabolomics. In the last two seasons, I've discussed with many metabolomists about how powerful, sensitive, and informative metabolomics can be. But this year, I want to zoom in on the impact, the applications that are or soon will be changing our lives for the better. Welcome back to The Metabolomist. Today, my guest is Audrey Le Guélec. Welcome.
Hi.
Hi. Thank you for joining me. You are an associate professor and a hospital practitioner at the University Hospital of Grenoble in France.
Yeah.
And I also want to mention that you are the president for the last year of the French-speaking network for metabolomics and fluxomics. But I will let you introduce the other activities you have because you wear many hats. Please tell our audience a little bit more about the work that you do and also the different affiliations and the hats that you wear.
Okay, thank you so much, Alice, to give me the opportunity to discuss with you today and to share some advice or some comments on the fields of metabolomics. As you told, I'm associate professor and hospital practitioner, head of a metabolomics platform at Grenoble Alpes University. I lead a research group leading the microbe host dialogue in the field of infectiology in the TIMSE laboratory in Grenoble in France. I'm also a deputy director of the doctoral school of engineering for health condition and the environment. And as you mentioned, president of the French-speaking metabolomics and fluxomics network.
Please. Thank you. And so already this gives us also a picture of the many different levels where you contribute to the field, because there's the research itself, which of course, like all researchers do, and this is usually what gets you into these topics. But then there's the education with the doctoral network. There's the networking with collaborators between different countries, with the Metabolomics Fluxomics Network. And also you do seek in your work in the clinic, from what I understand, you seek to collaborate with the medical doctors and also the decision makers that are necessary if we want metabolomics to be adopted more broadly in the clinics. And I think this is probably a lot of work, I expect. But also, you are one of the few people who really invest in doing this work. So could you tell us more from your perspective what that looks like on maybe not a daily basis, but like in a routine way, and what are the main challenges from your perspective for this?
I mentioned that I am hospital practitioner, and in fact, I forgot to say that I'm a medical biologist responsible for routine care parameters in biochemistry of inflammation and also in CSF biochemistry. So I'm in charge of this kind of biological tests for people that are hospitalized in Grenoble. And with that hat, as you say, I saw that we measure a lot of metabolites in order to put to better diagnose some disease like diabetes or other. And when for my fundamental research, I begin to understand this powerful tool, the metabolomics, what we can do with that tools in our hands, I see that there is something to make in the hospital to bring this powerful tool until the hospital, until the medical laboratory, the chemical laboratory, and then to use it. But for that, we have to make the proof of concept. We have to convince the people that this is a powerful tool to use. Mm-hmm. And for that, as you mentioned, we need to convince the stakeholder. You need to convince the people that this is good to use metabolomics, mm-hmm. as now genomics is currently used in some laboratory to make some diagnosis. But we have 5 years to make this a dream becoming a reality. My job today is to better understand the maturity of the metabolomics in terms of development of omics science. So for mm-hmm. that, I'm working a lot with scientists, like in the RFMF, where we collaborate together. We know what are the evolution of this science. But also, I'm talking with the clinician, with medical biologists in biochemistry, for instance, and what we have to do to implement this omics in our hospital in France, for instance, and how we will do that in the next 5 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really interesting. And I guess, is it because you work in the clinics already that you have access to all these different specialties, or do you still have to go out and find them by yourself?
It's because of my position. Like, let's say we are B appartenant in French, so hospital and university people that working both at hospital and at the university. And so I am close to some other people that working in biochemistry in all the hospital of France. Mm-hmm. We are together 2 days per year, and we discuss about how our job will evolve in the future. Mm-hmm. And so we are connected by the position I have, in fact. We have this annual meeting.
And
that context that we think about the evolution of our job.
Well, it's really interesting. And so let's go back to metabolomics. I'm sorry, just curious. But so you mentioned that in your experience, so genomics has a good foothold now in the clinic, is starting to be understood and used. But metabolomics is still a growing omic. When we discussed previously, you mentioned to me that the first paper we'll discuss is one of the studies that got you interested in metabolomics and showed you the power of that tool. How would you describe what it brings in comparison to genomics? Like, if you explain it to someone, why they should go to metabolomics and not only use genomics, what would be your argument?
Yeah, so you mentioned a publication that we published some years ago. It's about metabotypes of Pseudomonas aeruginosa. We are studying the dialogue molecules between Pseudomonas aeruginosa and human cells. And we are interested in why some cystic fibrosis patients with chronic infection with that bacteria are stable in time, during time, and some declining, the health of status of these patients are declining. And for that, we make a longitudinal collection of strains of Pseudomonas aeruginosa. And just to answer to your question, what is the advantage of metabolomics to genomics? A lot of people use genomics to understand the evolution, the metabolic adaptation of Pseudomonas, in the lungs of cystic fibrosis patients. But it's very difficult to find correlation between some genetics mutation and phenotypes of strains related to the health status of the patients. Another argument is that we know that some convergent metabolic adaptation of strain infecting independent patients can be achieved by distinct pathways, mm-hmm. but there are some good correlation, convergent metabolic adaptation of Pseudomonas in the cystic fibrosis lungs. So we think that metabolomics could be useful to look for the metabolic adaptation of Pseudomonas aeruginosa in the cystic fibrosis lungs, and we make some untargeted metabolomic on this clinical isolates of Pseudomonas aeruginosa. And we compare, so we call it metabotypes of Pseudomonas aeruginosa with the different strains, infecting 32 different patients. And we look for the health status based on the measurement of the lung function, let's say VEMS or something like that. And we look for the stability of the lung function in time, if patients are stable or if patients are declining. And we demonstrated that we see some correlation between production of some metabolites by strains, cytotoxicity of strains, and instability of the lung function of patients. And I think it was really interesting because for us, it was the first time that we could correlate some particular metabotypes, phenotypes of bacterial strains, infecting patients, and health status of the patients. And that is very powerful. And for us, it was fantastic to use this metabolomics to do that.
It's a beautiful study. So we put the link to the paper on the page of this episode. But for people who listen to the podcast, this will probably remind them of an episode from last year where we had a researcher from Harvard Medical School. That was Rachel Kelly. For people who want to go listen to it, her group was looking at asthma and also looked at metabotypes, and they found different, let's say, phenotypes of patients. So they could separate their cohort into different phenotypes from the symptoms, the same you did. And then they found a good correlation with different metabotypes on the metabolome. But your study adds to that the genotype of the bacterium that is associated with the disease. So then you have another level where you find an association with the phenotype and the different types of bacteria that associate with these phenotypes. It's a beautiful study. It's very interesting to read. So when you look at what I also like also, because of course I'm interested in the metabolomics part, so I always go look at which metabolites come up in the signatures for each metabotype. And in your case, the top 10 metabolites for the three metabotypes that you look at, or three metabotypes that you look at. And there are lots of metabolites related to polyamines and a lot also related to nucleotides. Did you look deeper into why these would be the ones discriminated, those three phenotypes?
Yes, parthenoids currently our main research in the lab. So we are continuing to pursue this investigation, and we are attempting to study the causal and non-correlative relationship between polyamine production and virulence. But we are looking for what is the mechanism by which these start. Why, I mean, our elevated level of polyamine are associated with increased virulence of Pseudomonas aeruginosa, and we are looking deeper in that. Because we did not mention that before, but I'm a biochemist, and as a bio, I'm very interested not only metabolites, but also on association of proteins like type 3 secretion system in Pseudomonas aeruginosa, how it works, and using metabolomics to better understand this metabolism adaptation or metabolism perturbation, but finally to make a beautiful story about how these metabolites are implicating in the phenotypes.
Yes,
and it's very interesting.
Maybe one of the first steps, because we're talking about host pathogen interaction. You're studying sputum samples, so is your first question to wonder whether these metabolites, for example, the polyamines, whether they come really from the pathogens or whether they come from the host?
Yeah, it's a good point. In fact, polyamines are also coming from the host because we are available to produce that kind of metabolites. And that's very interesting that the regulation of this polyamine is very complicated. I'm sorry, you know, better this kind of regulation very soon, because I hope that you will have all the story. But there are multiple ways to produce this polyamine in bacteria. This is the same molecule as in human, produced by human cells. There are positive regulation of the transcription of these genes in bacteria when this polyamine is present in the environment. So the production of polyamine by the host will activate the production of polyamine in the bacterial cells. And so it's very complicated to know
which one came first.
And for that also, we have a clinical trial. Currently, I'm dealing with some samples from cystic fibrosis patients that we follow longitudinally for 2 years. And we have samples every 3 months. And we are looking also for the presence of this polyamine and associated with the presence of the bacteria Pseudomonas aeruginosa, and looking also for some correlation. Again, with human, we have often correlation, but we have not all the explanation. Then we come back to the lab, we go with animal model, we make some experiments, and also with bacteria, and in vitro cultivate these bacteria and make the proof. So I don't know if I'm really clear, but the human trial make us possible to make some new hypothesis, and then we come to the lab and make some experiments to confirm the cause link between these metabolites and the phenotypes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Already in this paper, you have a lot of levels and a lot of data to combine. But when you do a study like this, would you prefer to have even more omics?
It's a great point. And last 2 years, a postdoc in my lab began some transcriptomics analysis of these bacterial strains in order to confirm the fact that the polyamine could increase the transcription of some genes and so on, and also which genes are implicated in that regulation, et cetera, et cetera. So I think transcriptomics and metabolomics are really good omics to combine, but I will genomics at the end to confirm that, because you have this mutation in the non-coding areas, the post-transcriptional and the post-translational regulation, all this regulation that could happen. And when you have your story, you can come back to the genome and see if there is some mutation in the region. Otherwise, with the genomic alone, you will never have it discover that, because it's in the non-coding area. And it's not obvious that this mutation is implicating in the phenotype.
I often ask people when we discuss a specific paper, what was particularly difficult? What is there an aspect that you would like to point out, especially for maybe younger researchers or people who begin with metabolomics or with this kind of studies, where there was a real difficulty and maybe you found a fix for it, or you just know that it's a lot of work and people should be aware? Is there anything that comes to mind?
I think if I take this publication in particular, an example, I think the most important thing is to collaborate with the people that have the skills to do the things. For me, the most important thing, it's because it's why in that publication we have a lot of authors, because they have done a good job, like the team of Christophe Junot, François Fenaille in Paris for the metabolomics, because at that time we have not our equipment, and so we collaborate with them. They did the metabolomics, they know how to do that very well. I think for young people, the best advice is you want to make big things, you need to collaborate, to talk to the best people that make it correctly in the world.
Mm-hmm. That's great advice.
I advise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very often what people answer, because especially with metabolomics, it's a multi-skill topic. I see it also with myself. I'm more of a biologist, and then I'm asking an analytical chemist. So does that make sense? How does this work? And then together we manage to put together a plan that makes the best possible sense.
Yeah, exactly. And I mentioned in different fields, but also in the field of metabolomics, there are so good skills. So speak with people that have this.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Are there other points about the paper that you'd like to discuss?
For me, just funny things is that I did my PhD on Streptococcus pneumoniae, and I'm looking for the link between cell division and also antibiotics that target cell division. And so so when we begin this story, I will not think that we will find some metabolites linked to the cell wall synthesis in relationship with the antibiotic resistance. And it was really funny for me to see that this old cell division, bacterial cell division, antibiotic resistance finally serve to understand and to focus on particular metabolites that are linked to evolution of the resistance or Pseudomonas in the patients.
So in your previous experience during your PhD, you learned about certain metabolites or certain parts of the cell
wall, exactly.
And then you recognize them when you look at the metabolomics then. Okay, I understand. This is also a good point for me because a lot of people feel insecure about interpreting metabolomics because there is so much. It's probably true about any omics, but especially about metabolomics because sometimes less well annotated or less well described than other omics. And I think this is also a great point where the best way and really the only way to learn is to just do it by experience and to do it again and again. And every time that you look at a data set, you have the experience of all the other ones you've looked at and you see more and more things. There's no way around it. That's a good example for that.
Yeah, exactly.
And so my last question about that paper is, of course, about the applications for it. So when you describe something like this, where you see you can describe metabotypes, so metabolomics enables you to find things that correlate with different phenotypes that will be very relevant to the patient. What are for you the applications that you can imagine about this in the next few years? What would you envision from this?
For me, there are two points. The first one is to target enzymes that produce these metabolites that are associated with the virulence, with the cytotoxicity, and also with the instability of the lung function. You could prepare inhibitors of the enzymes because a lot of drugs today are inhibitors of enzymes. So for me, it's a great way to discover new targets, new drugs against this pathogen. Mm-hmm. And the second point is maybe, and it's more related to my job in the hospital, say, it's about to use mass spectrometry to say the presence of these metabolites in the sputum of the patients each time they come for a visit, regular visit, and to use it as a biomarker of health. But for that, you have to demonstrate that it could work. So it's a long way to do that, but it's another way to think about the user.
In this case, it could be used as a monitoring tool to see whether patients shift from one status to another.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds great. That would be really great application. So I guess your work now following on this study is trying to go a bit in that direction and using the story, the mechanistic story, to also give some strength to the,
exactly,
in addition to the validity of a clinical trial, but to also understand a bit better how that would work.
Yeah. It's why I said that we have this clinical trial currently where we are measuring the presence of these metabolites in the time every 3 months on patients following for a period of 2 years and to see if we can prove that these metabolites could be a good biomarkers of this degradation of the health status.
Mm-hmm. Great. I hope we get to see some of that work coming out to the clinic soon. Mm-hmm. Wishing you all the best for that.
Okay.
And I think this is a good transition for the second paper we wanted to discuss, which is a small review that you authored last year, mm-hmm, where you discuss what clinical metabolomics will bring to the medicine of tomorrow. And as I introduced you in the beginning, I also introduced you in relation to that paper so that people get a bit an understanding why someone like you would write a review like this, because you're really at the interface of many different worlds that need to work together to get this to happen. So could you tell us first, why is it important to write this thing that's in between a review and an opinion piece? What does it bring to write this kind of papers?
Okay, first of all, it's important that we speak the same language, because as I mentioned, I'm from different communities, and sometimes when I go to the RFMF and I speak about what is a biomarker, what is my job, sometimes I see that they are far from this environment. Mm-hmm. And also for the medical biologist, when I speak about metabolomics, sometimes some people say, well, yes, I'm doing metabolomics now. I have few metabolites that I measure in my samples. And I think, no, it's not metabolomics. So the first thing for me is to explain exactly what I have in mind, what is my definition, but maybe the definition is not the same for everyone. But when we discuss together, I see, okay, have you read this paper? Have you read the definition, what I think it is? And then people have the same fun, could begin to discuss together because we need the same level of understanding, and then we could discuss. So first of all, for me, it's important to explain the words, the context also. For instance, even some people think that they could do clinical metabolomics and they are scientists, and it's not possible. We need this legal environment to use metabolomics and to give the patients the results. You can't do in a research lab. So it's important to say the things and to make people aware about what...
And you see this a lot in the way that the paper is written. So I think it's my opinion, but that the way, like the level of detail that you get into is good to like bring in the clinicians so that they can understand what metabolomics is about, but also good for the more basic scientists, more fundamental scientists to understand what the clinical needs are. And so it's a typical thing in this kind of papers where you try to level down with everyone so that everyone feels like they're part of it.
Exactly, exactly. You say better than me, but exactly.
No, but it really transpires because when I start seeing people describing like there's NMR and there's mass spec, I'm like, oh no, how deep is this going to get? And it was really a good level because you understand a little bit. There are different methods, for example, but we don't go into like, these are all the columns, the types that you can use. You have some reviews that really go into this level of depth with where I think you can really lose the clinicians in this because they're like, yeah, maybe don't need to know all the detail of what you do. I imagine also that when you write a document like this, does it help you also to put your ideas together? Does it help you personally to progress your thinking about the issues?
For me, it's more to find the recent literature. For the example, to see what is currently published on that subject. So the way to do that, to have the time to read some publication and to make this review of that, it's a way to make it more digestible for the different communities and to communicate on. There is two distinct ways to make metabolomics. One, to identify biomarkers, new biomarkers for disease. And that could be done in every research lab where they have access to human samples.
Yeah.
And there is a way, maybe not a concrete way today, but a way that we are dreaming of using metabolomics, let's say, as a fingerprint approach and to get model where we could classify the patients with these metabotypes that we could have, that we could get for each disease that we could imagine to diagnose, and each time we will have to get the model for that in the clinical lab. But but I dream
have
about
to
that.
Get, yeah, of course, me too. But then you have to get both the method to measure them and the algorithm together with it, right? Because if you exactly validate such a method for use in the clinics, you can't just measure every time. Let's say you have your own mass spec or your own NMR, and then you do it your own way. This is where the limitation is, I think, for a lot of translations of metabolomics to the clinics, is that you can't just say, I know that this metabolite is this one and that this is the concentration. You have to have one way of doing it and then always use that method. Otherwise, you have to revalidate. This is my understanding. Like, you have to IV your way of approaching it.
The question that we are trying to address with the working group of Société Française de Biologie Clinique, where we are discussing with the colleagues how we will do that. So we have to find a good model to demonstrate that it could be done. And, and with a lot of quality control, a lot of quality of acquisition of the data, the quality of the work is sufficient to make for rare disease or for some disease, we could do that.
But so in university hospitals,
yes. And the second way is to make, let's say, something more robust, with every people in each and every hospital use the same algorithm, kits, etc. But it will be to be demonstrated because nowadays it's not possible to do that.
So if I get it right, so in the first case, then each lab has to validate their approach, and then they can use it internally. And in the second way, then the validation would happen before, and then once, and then a validated product. I'm sure there are products like this for measurements of biomarkers already. So you buy a kit or a product from a supplier, and then you run it inside your lab. These are two different approaches. Is it how it works now for acylcarnitines, for example? I guess you also measure acylcarnitines in the clinics. And in that case, every lab has developed their own method. Is that the usual way?
It could be done like that. I don't know exactly for acylcarnitine, but I know a lot of example of some biomarkers that are, and sometimes we develop methods in our lab and we validate some results for the patients. So I think it's possible. You discussed about this algorithm. I think about the fibrotest, like biomarkers to measure the fibrosis of the liver. And then we measure the concentration of 5 or 6 proteins and metabolites. Mm-hmm. And then we add concentration on a website where a company developed this algorithm where we put the concentration of all of these metabolites and proteins, and then we have a score. And this score, we interpret like the level of fibrosis of the patients. And I think about that, about metabolomics. If we have a way to quantify 400 metabolites, and you have demonstrated, you have constructed the model, and you have this algorithm where you enter the concentration of all these 400 metabolites, and they give you a score, like the statistical supervised model that give you the answer, disease or LC. And then you could have, and we could imagine to make this dream a reality to validate the result for patients if the algorithm is demonstrated as powerful to classify the patient.
Yeah, I think there are lots of people who are trying to develop this at the moment. Do you see a big difficulty for this to happen? Is it the adoption later on, or does the technology still have to mature, or the large-scale validation studies haven't been done yet? Like, at which stage are we for something like this?
The major drawback today is equipment in the hospital, because I have a QExact team from Thermo Fisher, but not a lot of hospitals in France have this kind of instruments. So first of all, equipment in the hospital, then the capability to produce the data, because the sample is in the hospital. So then you have to measure to produce the data in the hospital. Then the variability of the signal in the different hospitals. So sometimes we know that with mass spectrometry, the noise is different. The signal could be different. So a way to calibrate and to make, so to have a way to have a concentration for that metabolites, absolute concentration. So that's necessary. And then, as we mentioned, a company that could propose to the hospital to enter the data to have these results, I mentioned before.
Yeah. So like a software solution that would give in the end a support for diagnosis to the practitioner.
The company that that mentioned for the fibrotest is Biopredictive. You can see Biopredictive and you can look how they do that kind of things. And you're just
we can put the link on the website, then people can have a look.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one sentence at the very beginning of the review that I like a lot, and I would like you to comment on this. You write, the clinical chemist must adapt and be a force of proposal, which I find very beautiful. How have you adapted in the last years for this, and how have you made yourself a force of proposal?
We need them to be force of proposition, because if I am alone, I will convince no one that it's interesting. So we need to be sufficiently numerous to convince that could be a way to.
Mm-hmm.
And it's why I say we need the clinical biologists to to be here and to, so it's the work that we do with the Société Française de Biologie Clinique. We are now discussing with a lot of colleagues, but we know we need them to make it.
Yeah, and I think a clinical chemist is really someone who is at the interface of both worlds. They understand the technology and they also understand the applications. And they're probably in the best position to translate whatever is not easy to understand for the other side.
Exactly, because a lot of people think that clinicians are the key. Clinicians are very important, but clinical chemists are very important because they have the sample, they have the technology and how to use it and how to produce the data. Without them, you couldn't have this data on your patients. So it's the people that need to push this omics a lot.
And do you think metabolomics is unique in this case? Because of course we talk about metabolomics because that's what we're interested in here, but is the approach similar for any omic, or would you ideally want to bring all omics together on the table, or should they all individually come, or is it disease specific? What's your idea about this?
For me, the best the omics that that is more advanced in our fields is the genomics, because as I mentioned, in the hospital we use the genomics for the diagnosis.
Yeah, but it has limitations too, so that's why people keep digging, right?
Yes, and also with ethics problem. In Europe in particular, it's now the most advanced omics in the hospital. Currently, in our hospital, we are creating omics units because we are convinced that this is the future for our jobs. Mm-hmm. So we are organizing a omics unit because, as you mentioned before, we need for bioinformatician and informatic server and a lot of also data scientists and some people that have skills to organize and to make the maintenance of all this kind of and for the hospital, it could be nice to bring together these people to make this omics unit and to share some resources, human resources for that. So that would be very nice.
To conclude on this paper, I would ask you if someone, because I'm hoping that as we discuss, some people are getting really excited about the possibilities and about the relevance of doing this work and of bringing metabolomics to the clinics. So if someone, whether they're a fundamental scientist or a chemist or maybe a clinician, if someone wants to help to make this happen, to be, a force of proposal. Do you have any advice for them on how to get started, how to find ways to do this?
Yes, we are discussing with colleagues that begin in that way, earlier career in my jobs. And the first advice I give them is the first of all, they have to have the equipment. Because without the equipment, they could do nothing. So the first thing is for a clinical chemist, have your own equipment in your hospital and try and make some to play with that equipment and to have the skills to use it. And then we could discuss how to use it for the future. So it's the first advice is to have the equipment.
Yes, of course, to be able to work. But then you mean that people should get in touch with you? Is that what you're suggesting?
Yes, if they wanted.
Or to find, at least to find other people maybe in their own university or in their own institution that are also driven by this goal, because I think it's the end goal for me is always care. It's what we began with. Better care for the patients, whether it's precision medicine or better monitoring or better diagnosis. It's a long list, but I think there are many ways where omics can help, and especially metabolomics. And I think it's a worthy goal to try and help this happen more quickly and also with a high quality. So really to have high quality tools that can be used in the clinics.
Exactly.
So that takes us to where you expect metabolomics to have an impact in the next 5 to 10 years. I would be very surprised if your answer had nothing to do with the clinics. But how would you phrase it? So where do you expect metabolomics to have an impact in the near future?
Well, I hope that as you are seeing currently in the literature today, there are a lot of publications that are showing today that metabolomics is useful to find new biomarkers for disease. So I think in the next 2 or 5 years, we will have more and more story to say that this omics is a good way, and maybe to use it also with, as I mentioned, transcriptomics or genomics to find some new biomarkers for new disease. So that could be very nice. And now my dream in the 5, 10 years, I think it will not be possible before, but in the 5, 10 years that every hospital in France or in Europe could have this own equipment and use some kit developed by company that could be useful to make the quantification of hundreds of metabolites in the same time on few microliters of blood and to use it with algorithm or to put a diagnosis for people that need it as possible. But now we have a lot of work on the bench.
And we've discussed a lot of difficulties to make this happen. If you had to pick one, what would you say, as you see it now, what would be for you the biggest hurdle, the biggest obstacle that would have to be crossed to reach that goal?
It's a good question. If people don't discuss together and want to have the best way to make it alone, I think we will have some issues because we need to do it together, all together.
So ego is the biggest hurdle.
Exactly.
Thank you. It's a really interesting answer because there are so many variables and so many things that contribute and that have to be optimized. But you're absolutely right. First, we have to all work together and then we can get the best of what everybody knows to get it to work as quickly as possible and as well as possible.
Exactly.
And this brings us to the very last question. Everybody's favorite question. What is your favorite metabolite and why?
So my favorite metabolite is spermidine. It's a metabolite that belongs to the polyamine molecules family. Mm-hmm. And I discovered this metabolite when we discussed about this paper published in a few years ago about metabotypes of Pseudomonas aeruginosa. We discovered that spermidine could be associated with virulence, with cytotoxicity, and with health status of patients. But moreover, when I read some very interesting paper about these metabolites, I discovered that this spermidine is associated with epuzination. That is a hematic reaction between lysine and spermidine could produce epuzin, and epuzin could be used to modify the EF5A
translation factor.
Yes, translation factor and conduct an important role on the proliferation of cells, etc., etc. And for me, it's really interesting that the pool of some metabolites would play a role on translation, but also transcription, methylation, acetylation. And we know that also. So it's really interesting. And for me, the central dogma maybe need to be revisited.
Absolutely.
Because we think that all the things come from genes, yeah. But maybe all the things come from metabolites.
Yeah.
Because without some pool of metabolites, we could not have transcription and translation of proteins. So it's really interesting for me, these metabolites.
Thank you. Thank you for this, Tris. I often make this point for epigenomics, for example, or epigenetic modifications. Here you have an example with post-translational modifications of proteins. And it's absolutely right. You need the metabolites to use your proteins and your genes in the way that you want. So this shows you the high value of metabolites and metabolomics. It's a beautiful conclusion. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So thank you. Thank you very much for taking part in the podcast. And
it was my pleasure.
Thank you for listening to The Metabolomist. I hope that this episode got you excited about the upcoming applications of metabolomics and that it motivated you to support science that brings a positive impact to our lives. To make sure you never miss an episode, register to our newsletter on the podcast webpage, themetabolomist.com. To learn more about metabolomics and how to plan your own projects, check out my book on metabolomic data interpretation at biocrates.com/thestoryprinciple. And don't forget to connect with me, Anisline Moussiel, on LinkedIn to continue the conversation on the many ways that metabolomics impacts health, research, and our lives.